with coccidiosis, there's going to be disruption in the gut. The organism enters the intestine, will invade the cell. One goes in and hundreds come out. And every cell that it invades, it's going to destroy that cell, disrupt that cell. So what happens is two things. One, you're going to interfere with the ability for the bird to absorb the nutrients it needs to grow. Also, they're going to just kind of feel off. I mean, if you had something going through your intestines and was causing disruption, you would not feel well. So do they back off feed? It's also then opens the door for other diseases to enter.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
AccuGut C.1 is a proven solution for your coccidiosis toolbox. Give those traditional tools a break and rotate to AccuGut C.1. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/AccuGut to learn more. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost poultry health and performance. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. Sid Lines, an Ecolab company, AV Prime program offers a broad range of cleaning and disinfection solutions combined with tailored advice to improve hygiene on your farm or hatchery.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show, everyone, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Doug Corver, dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the poultry industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's interview. If you find this episode interesting, please let us know by visiting our website at wisenetics.com. Our guest today is Dr. John McCarty, who is the field veterinarian for poultry at Boehringer Ingelheim. Welcome to the program, John.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about your career path in poultry health? How did you get to your current position?
Rather interesting. Always knew I wanted to be a veterinarian. Thought I was going to be a dairy practitioner. Actually did my undergrad, same place you did, UC Davis. And I got a master's there and then got accepted to the University of Georgia for vet school. And that was really my first exposure to poultry when I was in school, but still found it interesting, but, you know, didn't really think about it. And when I got out into practice and got going, I ended up doing a mixed animal practice. I realized what I really enjoyed was the medicine part. And thinking back on like poultry and the classes I had and the people I'd met, I just was calling them and talking to them and just realized, wow, poultry is actually what I really want to do. I really like the flock herd health management concept. I did not enjoy surgery, but really enjoyed medicine and putting pieces together. So after I practiced for about 2 years, I got accepted to the MAM program there at the University of Georgia as well, and went back and got that degree. And that started one of the best things I've ever done in my life. It's been great. I've been mainly in the allied industry side, working for mainly vaccine companies. As I tell everybody, I joke, all the companies I work for don't exist anymore. They all got acquired, but I also have some production experience, which I think has been very helpful in as far as, you know, understanding what our customers need. And when I started out with Select Labs, which is now what BI is, but I came back when they were Mariel. They brought me back in because of the experience I had with coccidiosis when I was working with the shearing plow. And it's been great. I've been back since 2009, and now we're Boehringer Ingelheim. That we're 7 years into that merger, but it's been a lot of fun. So I've really enjoyed it.
Boehringer Ingelheim develops poultry vaccines of unparalleled quality with a focus on prevention and control across a wide range of diseases. We deliver unique, sustainable solutions for broilers, layers, breeders, and turkeys. Our veterinary network brings unsurpassed knowledge and experience, helping producers make smart, innovative, science-driven decisions to improve bird health and performance. For more information, visit poultryhealthusa.com.
What are your current responsibilities at Boehringer Ingelheim?
Well, we have a system where we have key account veterinarians and we're assigned counts and we work very closely with the key account managers. So right now, I am the lead for our coccidiosis product because I have the most experience, but we do everything. So we'll, you know, I work with the coccidiosis, I work with the customer. We're doing a lot with a metapneuma virus that's circulating right now, do a lot with also doing a lot with Newcastle right now. There's some things going on in some of the states where we're looking at our Avenue, which was a product that was it's older now. It's off patent, but was developed at the University of Georgia. So, but mainly in the field, working with the customer, just trying to help come up with solutions and assist them any way we can.
Yeah, you mentioned your expertise in coccidiosis. Can you give an overview of coccidiosis for our audience?
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, it's an organism. All flocks are exposed to it. It's ubiquitous around the world. And if you're going to place chickens on the ground, they're going to be exposed to it's an Emeria species, a single cell organism. And there's different species, pretty much species specific. So those strains that affect chickens primarily affect chickens. You don't see them cross over, or if they do, they don't survive well. And I do tell people up front, I'm not a parasitologist. There's people that can give you a lot more information on that. But it where my expertise comes in is understanding how to use the live vaccines that are on the market, and really have spent a lot of time looking at how to properly use them, how to apply them, and get the results you want from performance on your flock. But it's plagued the industry. Again, if you have backyard chickens, usually they have gone through a coccidiosis reaction. They have immunity and protection, and you didn't even realize they did it. They were, you know, just pecking at the dirt and picking up the osis, and it would be cycling through them, and they would create immunity. When we do confinement rearing and we have a concentrated population, the coccidiosis is so successful in replicating them, it can become overwhelming. So we've had to, first we start out with chemicals to control this organism, and then the big breakthrough was in the 70s when ionophores came along, which are basically like an antibiotic. They have some antibiotic properties, but they're very efficacious in controlling coccidiosis and really changed the industry and the success of the of us controlling coccidiosis in the flocks. And then what happened was, as we kept using them and putting pressure on those products, the coccidiosis was figuring ways around the products. And actually, vaccines have been around forever. Dr. Edgar at Auburn University developed that first vaccine back in the late 40s, 1940s, early 50s. But they never caught on because the chemicals and the ionophores worked so well. But as we started seeing some, and not really resistance by drifting in the population that we can see, but just starting to select for populations that were naturally resistant, vaccines in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s really started to become popular again to help restore sensitivity to the control methods that we use to control coccidiosis.
Mm-hmm. So it's important to control coccidiosis. Obviously, there's disease associated directly due to the Imeria parasite, but what about gut disruption in general? Are there some carryover effects or knock-on effects of a coccidiosis outbreak?
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing. And with coccidiosis, there's going to be disruption in the gut. The organism enters the intestine, will invade the cell. One goes in and hundreds come out. And every cell that it invades, it's going to destroy that cell, disrupt that cell. So what happens is two things. One, you're going to interfere with the ability for the bird to absorb the nutrients it needs to grow. Also, they're going to just kind of feel off. I mean, if you had something going through your intestines and was causing disruption, you would not feel well. So do they back off feed? It's also then opens the door for other diseases to enter. And one of the things working with a vaccine and really following that cycle that occurs in the birds, and it requires that bird to be exposed to this organism multiple times to get full immunity. So it's not a one and done. And each time that that cycle occurs, there's going to be more organisms that are presented to the bird. And then eventually the immune system recognizes it and shuts it down. And we have to be sure all that occurs, because there are certain diseases like gangrenous dermatitis and necrotic enteritis that if the cycling is happening at a particular time, we found the incidence of those diseases increased dramatically. So we've spent time looking at, with the vaccines, especially applying them to the birds, being sure that they're cycling at the proper time to get disruption in these diseases. And when we're using the chemicals of the ionophores, the cycle, we were obviously very well of the life cycle of the organism, but we didn't really worry about it too much because it kept everything in check. But when we then started moving towards vaccine, it became much more important to understand the cycle that the bird's going through and how they develop immunity and when that immunity occurs.
Yeah, and historically, the industry's used antibiotics to control things like necrotic enteritis. So what you're saying is getting good control of Imeria, of coccidiosis, really is an important part of an antibiotic-free production system.
Yeah, exactly. So I was there at the time shearing plow with their product. I started with them when it really was starting to take off. The Shearing had bought Mallinckrodt and incorporated this product into their inventory, into their portfolio. And there was such a learning curve. Even though it had been out there for a long time, it just didn't have the people looking at it the way we were then. And we actually saw that this cycling can dramatically impact those diseases when they occur and how significant the challenge can be just based on how you cycle the cocci through the birds.
If you're enjoying this episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics, please remember to like, subscribe, and share it with your friends and family. You can also set the notifications to on from our channel so you don't miss any other upcoming episodes. And always, please feel free to leave us your comments at any time. Your feedback is always invaluable to us. So you talked a little bit about vaccination programs. What are some of the key aspects of a successful cocci vaccination program?
Again, that's the area that I've spent a good 10, 15 years doing research and studying. And what we found, so for convenience, we vaccinate the bird in the hatchery, but immunization actually occurs in the chicken house. And a lot of people don't understand that. But what we've learned in its shearing, we had learned that the volume was very important. You had to have at least a certain minimum amount of volume on the birds to get the box covered correctly. The other thing that when went to Mary Ellen, which is now BI, we started looking at, there was a paper out of Texas that talked about the importance of having light stimulation, and that when you had light stimulation on these birds, that they would ingest, whether it was this, the study in Texas was done with probiotics, but we found the same with coccidiosis, that the uptake of the vaccine was much better than if you didn't have the lights. So we've done a lot of studies where we look at the volume, the lights on the birds, the staging in the hatchery, and then setting the birds out to the house. So what's important in the hatchery is that you have good light stimulation, so they preen, that you have the proper volume, and each product kind of has its magic number that you need. Like for our product, we find 25 to 30 mLs per 100 chicks is what works the best. And that can be a combined volume. It isn't like you have to put 30 mLs for the cocci, and then if you're going to do respiratory, you got to do another 7 or 14. You can get that the total volume that goes on these birds is around 30. And then we have the lights that will be on the cabinet to stimulate the birds, and then a well-lit chick room so the birds stay active and preen. And then once you get them out to the chicken house, depending on the product you're using, like ours is precocious, so we cycle a little bit quicker, knowing that peak shed day that occurs, then that will help you determine when's the best time to turn the birds out. So an example with our product is that we have our peak shed at 5 days of age. So the worst time to turn out our birds would be at 5 days, because they're going to ingest these oocysts. They're going to takes about 7 days for it, 5 to 7 days for it to cycle through the intestines. They're going to shed it back into the litter, and we need time for those birds to pick up that what's been shed into the litter and then move the birds into the next part of the house. So if you're doing whole house brooding, you're not moving anything. But if you're doing partial brooding or half house brooding, you're going to want to be sure that the birds shed, ingest, and you need, once they shed that oocyst into the litter, you need 24 to 48 hours for it to sporulate so that it will be infective again to the bird. Then you want to move them into the next part of the house so they evenly spread this vaccine through the chicken house. And that's for all products. Realize that what you're doing in the hatchery is just putting the bird and the vaccine together. The bird's going to carry the vaccine out to the chicken house for you. And then immunization occurs in the house. And it really starts about the second week. Their digestive system is such that they have a hard time processing this. So they basically just carry the oocysts out to the farm for us, spread it through the chicken house, and then we keep being sure they ingest at the right time, and then keep moving the bird through the house so they can keep spreading the oocysts. And this process is going to take anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks. But by the third week, if you're doing everything well, they have a really good partial immunity, almost a full immunity for the three species we worry about in the broilers, and you'll have very good protection.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about you mentioned having good lighting in the hatchery. Is that, well, part of it is probably the activity, but is also part of it just the birds are better able to see, or there's more reflection off of the liquid?
Yeah. It does both. It's interesting where we have sex separate type boxes, you know, so where there's sex thing in the birds, and it's starting to come back into the broiler side. I first realized it in the breeder side. The pullets, they'll be very active and eat, and the males just kind of want to go sit in the corner. It's kind of, so with the broilers, if it's a straight run, you know, you got the females kind of keeping the males active. But yeah, the glistening of the water, a lot of people are moving to gel for this. They just, the better lighting, they can see the gel, they'll ingest the gel, and it can be a very quick process if properly vaccinated, properly lit. The chick room is the proper temperature, so the birds aren't chilled or cold. They will ingest this product in 3 to 4 minutes. It's very quick, because if the little things are off or the birds are a little lethargic, it can take up to, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes. But again, if they're in a clean environment, especially with some of these new gels, it's amazing how quick they will ingest it. But water gel, both work very well. It's just knowing what you're working with and make some minor adjustments, but both do a very good job of getting the birds to ingest the oocysts.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that Boehringer Ingelheim's product uses precocial strains of Imeria. So it's important for a producer really to be working with the vaccine supplier to make sure that the product is being used effectively.
Yes. Yeah. And so like our product, all our species, so the broiler vaccines have basically three species, the Acervulina, Maxima, and Tanella. And all ours are naturally occurring strains. It was a project that actually Dr. Jeffers did back in the 70s, where he showed if you harvest these oocysts, the first ones that are shed. So I said our peak shed day is at 5 days, but if you go in at 4 days and start harvesting those and get those 4 and 5 day ones, the trait of them cycling quicker is stable. And so he's like, well, this is great. We can get this to go quicker, but do they have the benefits of a vaccine where they will, you know, stimulate enough stimulation to get immunization? And he found out they did. So it's a stable population that was naturally selected. No attenuation occurred, and it cycles sooner. But if you look at the other products that have the parent or non-attenuated strains, they're going to take, where ours is peaked at 5 days, their peak's around 7 days. And it's just important to know that, because it's going to impact when you want to turn the birds out, how you want to manage the birds. So like you said, you need to understand what you're using. Once you understand it, then the rules are basically the same. It'll just be maybe the timing of when you do it that's different.
Mm-hmm. So I'm up here on the Canadian prairies, and we have a few challenges that maybe aren't common in the southeastern U.S. For example, we have a very dry winter. What could producers do to counteract that? Because obviously litter moisture is important for proper cycling.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And actually, I would love to say it came out of my brain, but it actually came out of users, one of our customers. We will have, for us, the dry time of the season is the fall. So when we get the cool, like September, October, we've been running the fans real high. We'll get pretty dry, powdery litter, like you can see. We also, the West Coast, California, very, very dry litter. And there was an operation we were working with in California that they, at the time, they were growing antibiotic-free birds before it was cool to be growing antibiotic-free birds. And they had a lot of problems. So one of the first things we did was to get them not to clean out after every flock. We use a lot of built-up litter in the Southeast, especially properly managed litter, but built up. So that helps with the coxie population. So they did that. Prior to that, they were cleaning out after every flock, but experiencing a lot of necrotic enteritis. So the broiler manager, when we convince them that, hey, why don't you try not just clean out some houses for a year, see what happens? Well, those houses perform very well. And, but then again, you have people that are relying on getting that litter for, you know, spread in the fields, fertilization, and that's a source of revenue for the company. They wanted to clean out. They had to clean out. Well, what happened was the broiler manager called us and he said, hey, it was great. Everything is going good. We cleaned out and I'm back to square one. And we're like, that doesn't surprise us. And he was the one that said, well, what if before I place these birds, I just go back in and spray the litter? Now it's actually on our label that for a day of age or older. So if the birds are in the house, you can do this. You can go out and spray the birds. But a very long story short, and we did a lot of research with it, in areas where it gets really dry, and I've seen them do this in California, seen them do it. We've used it in the Southeast in the drier times of the year, especially when you're first starting on your program. Just a application in the hatchery followed by another application in the field, and it is spray because the oocysts are too heavy to run through the water system. And you turn the birds out, you will be able to keep the oocyst cycling, and you will not get the problems with the necrotic or the dermatitis or birds breaking with cocci because they don't have enough immunity. So the field application has been very successful for us. There's other people too that will do a combination of a vaccine with a chemical or ionophore shuffle, and those are also very successful. We promote the field application because we don't have feed additive type products. So in our arsenal, the field application using the hatchery first, then the field works very well.
Mm-hmm. If a producer is looking at a combination of vaccination and feed additive control of coccidiosis, what are some key points that need to be kept in mind?
That's an excellent question. Even the traditional, like the ionophores or the chemicals, there's certain chemicals that are kind of weak, like Zoamix, and it will allow leaking. We'll see that in combination with the vaccines, the ionophores in combination, even things like Magnify, those saponins that people will use. They can be very successful. They can also be very detrimental. And in our experience, we have found that you do not want to use those products in your first feed. So whatever you have for your starter, and the longer you can avoid putting those on the birds, up to about 14 to 16 days, the better off you are. If you're coming in, if you have a, let's say you only feed like a 10-day or 14-day starter, we recommend that then when you put it in the grower, start that second feed at about half levels, and then in the third feed, you can go to full levels. If your starter is going out further, you can drop a full level in, but realize that the ones you would think would have an impact, the chemicals that are anticoccidial, the ionophores that are anticoccidial. But I can do the same with like the oreganos, the saponins. Those things can also have a direct impact. And what happens is all these isolates that are in the vaccines, a lot of them, especially the older vaccines, even ours, were never exposed to a lot of these. They were exposed to some of the chemicals, but not the ionophores and stuff. So they're very sensitive to those. So you just need to be able to assure that they can start cycling in the birds. And then the numbers will get up enough that even if there is some impact on it, the numbers are high enough, you can still get it to cycle through the birds. And then some of these, not the chemicals, but some of the ionophores also can give you some antimicrobial properties that could be beneficial too. But we have found that you just want to avoid the starter with these different products because you will wipe out the vaccine and really disrupt cycling.
So you talked about the importance of getting that first cycle, especially in subsequent cycles, but are there general brooding conditions that are important in terms of the overall control of coccidiosis?
I always tell our customers, and actually one of our sales guys loves it, what's good for the birds is good for the oocysts. So if you're doing what you should be doing correctly, providing heat, providing, you know, proper water, proper food, proper litter moisture, which even in the really dry environments we saw, like in California, where it can be incredibly dry in the summer, after you've gotten those birds into the house, and this is in a broiler situation, there's so many birds in that house, the litter moisture usually gets to where you need it to be without any problem. So sometimes in the, like with pullets, when we're looking at breeder stock, the density is not enough, and you might even have to do some wetting of the litter. Actually, where you are in Canada, you might even have to do that sometimes too. But yeah, if whatever is good for the bird, the heat, the moisture, the comfort zone, they're there with the feed and the water. The coccidiosis thrives in that environment as well too.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Beringer Ingelheim. Health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Probiotech International. Creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Making life easier for animals and those who care for them is the mission of Jeffo. Probiotech International is driven by innovation, inspired by nature, and passionate about contributing to a more sustainable, safe, and healthy food system. We work closely with our customers to deliver solutions to current and future challenges facing the animal production sector while using natural active ingredients such as chemotypes and polyphenols derived from plant extracts and spices. Our products follow a rigorous scientific validation process. They are then proven to work through thorough field research, certified for quality, and then brought to market as a complete and effective solution. In a world filled with rapid change, let Probiotech International deliver your opportunities for solutions and savings to your program. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information.
Well, John, that's been a great overview of the factors related to successful vaccination against coccidiosis, and it's been really interesting. Before we go, though, I've got a few questions for you, maybe a little lighter. What's your favorite poultry-related book or resource? What's your go-to?
Diseases of Poultry. I probably pull that book off my shelf more than any other book, and once had a professor tell me, he goes, I don't mind people calling me, but just please read the book before you do. So I have always, there's sometimes I'll be driving down the road and I'll call him and I'm like, I'm on the road. I didn't have a chance to read the book. Can I pick your brain? But it's amazing the information that's in there. And there's so much I read, and either you're like, oh God, I've totally forgot about that. Or you learned something new. So Diseases of Poultry is my go-to. It's there. I pull it off the shelf all the time.
Yeah, and it's updated relatively frequently, so it's usually pretty up to date. So
Avian, I will throw in a plug for Avian Immunology. That is actually a really good book too. A little sometimes hard to understand, but it's a good book. So that's my second.
All right. What about outside of agriculture or poultry? What do you enjoy reading or watching?
I do a lot of podcasts where just current events and things like that. People laugh, but I've been intrigued by cryptocurrency. So a book called The Bitcoin Standard. It's one of the best books I've ever read. I've learned a lot. So I spend a lot of time playing with that as well.
And then finally, what do you think is necessary for someone to succeed in your field?
Pretty much like everything else in life, just showing up, having excitement, have an open mind. It's interesting because, like I said, when I went into vet school, I had very little knowledge on the poultry industry, but it's just been fantastic. I've been all over the world looking at chickens, interacting with people, learning, trying to assist them with their situations. And it just jump in with both feet, just go out in the field and see as much as you can. And it never hurts to walk in a chicken house. Every time I do it, I learn something new. So just being out there, being around the birds and just keeping an open mind. And I tell you, I wouldn't change anything. I've loved it.
Well, Dr. John McCarty, thank you very much for your time today. And it was a really interesting time we spent together.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
This concludes another episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics. Thanks for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated for future information on episodes. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is invaluable to us. You can visit wisenetics.com and learn more about all of our podcast segments for poultry, swine, dairy, beef, feed mill crops, and even pet food. I'm Doug Korver, and I'll see you next time on the Poultry Podcast Show.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.